हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 22, chapter 2, description of the Purusha avatars and Guna avatars. First breakdown, defining and classifying the avatars and their agents, Dvara 1 through 5, description of the Purusha avatars 6 through 15, description of the Guna avatars 16 through 59. So that's Brahma 19 through 25, Rudra 26 to 32, and Vishnu 33 to 59. Chapter summary. Having divided the forms of the Lord into three broad categories, now Rupa Goswami asks which of these forms descends into the material world. In other words, which of these forms are avatars and which are the source of all avatars? Because before it was the whole point of the Swayam and Vilas. Because Vilas means is that there's a pastime happening and so a particular quality manifests. Yes. Right? That's the element that we were discussing this morning, is that a certain aspect is there. Yes. And so then only that aspect is manifest. Not that everything else couldn't be manifest. You know, like let's say the man is out on the, you know, how you say, Appalachian, you know, slope skiing, right? Yes. So he can do that all the time. It's not that he couldn't also answer call and do take care of business or, you know, talk to the wife and kids or, you know, does that make sense? But it's just a matter of doing that all the time because then that taste happens. And then someone else is sitting there with the family and someone, you know, like that, you know, another expansion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the point is Krishna's doing that. So all these tastes he's getting at once. But And he's known for them because he's getting that particular taste. He's known by that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So Vilas then his general category is always an expansion from. So that means everybody who's expanded from Krishna technically is Vilas.
Yes.
Right? Except for that, what was it? Prakash? It wasn't here, right? We had this whole chart. Yeah. Except for the Prabhav Prakash, which means exactly the same mood. Right?
Yes.
Like that. So therefore you get all these different aspects. So it's a generic, there's the overall. Then there's the specific aspect of Vilas. Meaning that within this, then Krishna expands himself, it's also Swayam, that is himself, or it's a different mood, but it's still the same potency. You know, as Vaibhav, like Balaram. Expansion of different moods and bodily features, such as Brother Balaram, but it is the full potency. Then you divide, so therefore you have Swayam and the Tad-Ekatmaka. So the Tad-Ekatmaka means an expansion of different moods and bodily features that aren't manifesting that full potency. Right? Of the 64 qualities, they're only manifesting 60, either to a very full degree, complete degree, or to a very, very large degree. Yes?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Or when you get down into others, then like Brahma, then it'll be only 55 qualities in a quite... You know, substantial,
yes.
Like that. Okay. Does that make sense? like that, yes.
So, Balaram has all 64 qualities, yes?
Yes, but it's not necessarily that he manifests them, just like Nrisimhadev has, Ramachandra has, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has. So these are Vaibhav Prakash, okay. Right? So that's that's within the Swayam Prakash. It means it's still Swayam, but there's Vaibhav with his different mood, and there's Prakash where it is the same mood.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
It's interesting, Mahaprabhu, he manifested actually, you know, almost all of those forms while he was performing pastimes,
yes.
And none other did it, because Krishna wasn't manifesting, you know, some other forms, but Mahaprabhu did action.
Yes.
He showed Ramchandra, Nrisinga, Varaha, you know. And
yes. Also, even Ramachandra talked about when there was a discussion of with Sita about him as Krishna, she asked how would he look? You know, what would be that, the look and the mood? So instead of manifesting it just himself, he carved with one of his arrow tips a deity. You know, that I know that's one of our main deities. I'm not sure if it's not Totogopinath, because he walked. Is that? No, that's Shakhi Gopal. I think Totogopinath was standing. I don't know, it's one of our main deities, prominent deities, that deity, because he's a relief. So there was a rock, so he just carved him out of the rock. So he manifests the mood, but not directly himself, you know, like that. So yeah, Lord Chaitanya did very, very special. Yeah. Okay, so the general means, vilas means an expansion of from that's not manifesting all the same potency, right? And then within that, then you have Vilas, which are all the Vishnu forms. And then you have Swamsa, which takes on specific qualities. So they may be Vishnu Tattva, they may be Shiva Tattva, they may be, Jiva Tattva. Okay? So here. So then in this, then we're taking the three broad categories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now Rupa Goswami asks us, to those with a poor fund of knowledge, the Shastras appear to give conflicting statements regarding who is supreme, whether Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, or whether all forms of God are simply manifestations of the modes of material nature. Srila Rupa Goswami resolves such doubts here and gives conclusive information concerning the first two categories of avatar, the Purusha and Guna avatars. Because some will say, oh, they're manifestations of the modes of material nature, but it's actually they're the ones in control of. It's not that they're... Text 1. Jai-ho. Welcome, sir.
Welcome home.
Jai-ho. Thank you. What do they have here? We lost it. Purusha avatars, Guna avatars. Okay, text 1. Among the avatars described, Krishna is Swayam, the complete avatari, the basis of all other forms. By previously describing Krishna as Swayam, it is understood that Krishna is the root of all the avatars. Now begins the description of the avatars. It may be objected that Krishna is also glorified as one of the avatars. This verse responds, occasionally is counted as an avatara because of appearing in this world like others. Right? Because the avatar has the element of descending. Right? Like that. Text 2. Puravokta vishva karyartam apurva eva chet swayam dorantarena Vavishur avataras tadas nitaha. In the forms previously described, Swayam Rupa tad ekatma or avesha, appear in this world as ever unique, either directly or through an agent. For certain purposes in the material world, they are known as avatars. that form that descends from the spiritual world to the material world is called an avatara. Matsya and Hamsa, who appeared directly for Brahma, manifested forms without a visible source. According to Mahabharata and other scriptures, whereas Garbhodakshaya Vishnu appears from Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Krishna appears from Vasudeva, and Rama appears through Dasarat. Right? So he may appear in a way that there's a source, you know, a seeming source, or he may appear not. It just depends upon the pastime. So, like even I think Varaha. Not sure if he didn't. He came from the nose.
Brahma.
Right. So he may show a source. But the point is, he's the source of everything. So it's just for part of the pastime. What is their purpose? They appear to produce the universe or to perform activities within the universe. That means they appear to produce Mahatattva by agitating Prakriti, Mahavishnu, or to satisfy the devatas by killing the sinful, to give bliss to the devotees longing to see the Lord by becoming visible to them, and to preach the pure bhakti cult. Apurva Eva means that they appear ever unique, as if not having appeared before. Thus they are all remarkable. So it's, even he's doing the same pastime, there's a uniqueness to it. Right? Nrisimhadeva sometimes, like, he comes from the pillar this time. Other times he just walks in the front gate. Sometimes he's a lot bigger than the front gate. So in different ways he appears like that. It's also interesting to note is the element of creating the material world then as Mahavishnu and the Purusha avatars. And that, but then he says to satisfy the devas, he's always killing the demons, right? Which is standard. But the interesting, but for the devotees, he comes to perform his pastimes. So for the devatas, it's not so much about the pastimes of remembering, absorbing the Lord. It's that everything runs very nicely. Because if everything runs very nicely, then their life, as they know it, goes very nicely. Right? So that. Prakriti element is there in the demigods that they are looking for a nice material situation. Right? So it's a matter of what disturbs it that they want gotten rid of. Right? But fortunately, they're not asking that the material world be, how you say, improved. They already think it is improved. Because you compare it to wherever you're living. What I'm saying? If you're living in a nicer neighborhood, so if you go through a not-so-nice neighborhood of town, then you feel you're doing okay. Text 3 to 5. The agent of the Lord's appearance may be a tad-e-katma, rupa, the Lord, or a devotee. Mahavishnu, lying on sesh, is an example of the tad-e-katma, rupa agent, cause of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And Vasudeva, father of Krishna, is an example of a devotee asking as an agent. There are three types of avatara. Right? So in other words, if you're going to perform activities, because Krishna is referred to as he performs as lila, like a dramatic actor. Right? You need an agent.
Yes, I'm an agent.
Yeah, so it works. It's established by the Lord.
It's bona fide.
It's bona fide. There are three types of avatara: Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, and Lila avatars. The avatars are generally the Swamsa and Avesha forms. The appearance of the Swayam Rupa as avatara will be explained later. Right? So that will be Lord Chaitanya coming or Krishna himself coming. So that we'll discuss later. So Purusha avatars. Because these are the prominent categories within that Tad-e-Katmaka. Right? So because you have the Lila avatars, Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, then Shakti Vesh Manvantara Yuga and Yuga avatars. These ones are generally jivas themselves, like that. The Lord may take the place of them. As it's mentioned, as he is responsible for everything in the universe, anything that's not taken care of, he does it himself. Like if there's no jiva that's qualified to be Indra, then he just comes himself and is Indra. Right? Does that make sense? But otherwise, then these are generally given to others. Yeah. But there's Lila Purusha and Guna avatar, except for Vish Brahma and Shiva. That these are all Vishnu, yes. Right? And then this other line, then the Vilas line, then how you say? These are all the Chaturvyuha. All the those aspects. Swamsa refers to Shankarshan lying on Sesha and others. Footnote 22. Sesha here is the Lord, not Jiva. Avesha refers to Narada, the Kumaras, Prithu, and others. Generally means that sometimes the Swayamrupa appears. Atara means among the avatars. The description of the appearance of the Swayamrupa will occur after the discussion of the Lord of Vaikuntha in chapter 5. Rusha avatars. Right. So it's also important to catch the terminologies, right? So here is generally, because there is, you know, it means generally it happens like this, or generally it doesn't happen like this, like that. Is that so these kind of subtleties, because it's important, that's why the Acharya's commentaries are, they bring out what's happening. Otherwise the tendency is, we'll keep things to exact kind of element. And it's okay at exact, but the problem is our exactness is not necessarily the highest understanding. Because in the material world, we take general as the lower and exactness as the higher. But from the Vedic literature, general is the higher, exactness is the lower. Because exactness is the detail, while general is the principle. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Purusha avatars, text 6. The Purushas described in the Vishnu Purana. I offer my respects to the indestructible Lord who is a portion of Krishna, who partakes of material creation through his glance, who is one but is many, because of manifesting many amshas, who is pure but appears impure, who is full of knowledge, and who is the cause of distributing all living entities. Vishnu Purana 6.8.61. Sridhar Swami comments that this verse is continuous with the previous verse concerning the Supreme Lord. So we had the... Is that one in here? Or that was previous. Another, or just... Oh, okay, here it is. This verse describes the Purusha avatars according to the Vishnu Purana. Here is the description of the Supreme Lord previous to this in the Vishnu Purana. I offer respects to the worshipable Lord who is the source of the Purusha avatars, who has no destruction, no creation, no increase, no transformation into something else, no decay, and who is without double doubt real. Vishnu Purana 6.8.54. Right. So he's continuing with this. He's giving this one as an expansion of this. So he's already established Krishna. Yes.
What is meant by Amsha?
Amsha... didn't he say it up there? Amsha refers to Narada the Kumaras. That was Avesha. Amsha means part. Yeah. So in here, you have the generic that part just means coming from someone else and manifesting only a portion of the qualities. So that may be Vishnu Tattva or may be Jiva Tattva.
So basically, Amsa refers to all of his expansions, avatars.
Can, yes. Yes. That's why there's the general and there's the specific, right, in these, is that there's general descriptions. And so sometimes in the discussions we're using the general, sometimes we're using the specific. That's why it becomes confusing. That's why it's important to know the principle that's being discussed. And its definition. Then when it discusses the detail, we can see the connection. And so it's just a matter of time. We get used to hearing these, and then we'll start to, you know, place them nicely. It just takes a while, because it's a new concept. Right? You know, why is it a new concept? Because since time immemorial, we've been under the illusion that we're God. So now we're finding about someone else's God, and then he has all these expansions and everything else. So it's new. You know. you know, both, you know, from the element of being ever fresh, so they're all remarkable, but at the same time is, you know, that's the amazing part, the part where we're a little dull and don't catch it, that's because we're so still, you know, but aren't we, you know, what's the importance of this? You know, like when you teach an adolescent some new knowledge, your point is, what am I going to do with this? You know, why do I need this? You know, like that. You know, so it's the same, kind of, it takes a little while, right? You know, so. Okay, so continue, Baladeva Dibhushan. He is responsible for starting the material manifestation made of gunas by his glance and maintaining control over it. Although he is one, without giving up that oneness, he becomes many by amshas, he shows different forms. He is the cause of distribution of all life forms. But would he not become contaminated because of this contact with matter? This verse says that he is pure, although appearing impure, because he performs the creation of this universe by his will alone. And though he enters the universe, he does not touch it because of his achintya shakti. So it's his will, and so his will, he gets it done through his energy. He doesn't do it himself, like that. But the point is because his energy and him are non-different, it's him getting it done,
yes.
Right? That's the amazing thing. Yes.
So the description is that Lord never contacts material nature, but then when he appears on the earth and then he appears at the Paramatma and, you know, between every atom, then how is that happening?
Because he's dealing with his internal potency. But remember, is that his internal potency, the other side is the external.
Yes.
It's just a different office. So he deals with the internal potency, and that personality dealing is interacting with him as internal potency, then executes his will in connection with the material, then in the other office.
So he's surrounded only by internal potency,
yes.
Never by external.
No.
Okay.
But the point is the external potency is the same person. It's just a different function. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but then
let us say okay. For the child, well, the small infant, then the mother is always interacting, but it's one of taking care, nourishing, and all these kind of elements. But at the same time, she's also taking care of the house and doing everything. But technically, he doesn't interact with that aspect of his mother. Let's say she's vacuuming and he comes up, then he gets the mom interacting with him, not the, you know, vacuum. Lord of all she surveys and vacuuming the rug and keeping her domain. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the same way, is that it's the same person, it's just different moves. So the Surup Shakti deal interaction with Krishna is the internal potency, but the interaction with the contaminated living entities, that's the external. So that's why he's always, even where he steps, even though you're dealing with material energy, when he puts his foot, he steps on the internal potency. That's Nila. That's why there's always a lotus there. So wherever he steps, there's a lotus there. That's why when you have deities, they're always standing in a lotus. That's Nila. You have Shri, you have Bhu, and you have Nila. Does that make sense? So it's a fine. That's why then for us, if we're seeing everything in relationship with the Lord, even though the manifestation is through external energy, we're not dealing with the external energy, we're dealing with the internal. That's where it gets confusing, because it'll still manifest in a temporary way and have all its anomalies that the external does. But the effect that it gives upon us as the living entity is internal. So we get the spiritual experience. We get the spiritual effect. We're dealing with a pile of potatoes that are temporary. But the effect we get from preparing those for the Lord is eternal. You understand?
Yeah.
That's where Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. You know what I'm saying? So this element of switching, that's Yoga Maya. Right? Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. So that aspect of the super shakti, where there's no switch, that will be, you know, how you say, the manifestations of Lakshmi, you know, of Radharani.
No switch meaning?
Radharani always stays as Radharani.
Yes.
You know, dealing with the situations, organizing, managing, all those different aspects, that's done by Yogamaya.
Okay.
It's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Swarup Shakti, it's a complete Shakti. That's Radharani. But in that mood of taking care of, in other words, she's Ladini.
Mm-hmm.
So taking care of Samvit Sandini, that she does is Yogamaya.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Then it's complete. Just like Krishna, then he's interacting with the you know, the gopis, and that is Gopinath. Right, you know, in other words, the same element of on that platform of Prayojana. Baladev takes care of the other two. He's the Dom, he expands, he does everything. Right? And so therefore in his potency then you're taking care of, like, the Dom itself is his consort. Like that. At the same time as you have also Yogamaya, because Yogamaya, she refers to her husband, and then when they're talking about in the Dagda Madhava and all that, you understand that he's Lord Shiva. Right? But at the same time is that's that aspect of that aspect. Shiva expands from Sankarshan, expands from Baladev. So there's that side. In a sense, there's very, very subtle things there. So that's why the detail isn't so important. Because it kind of, when you get up into the higher realms, the detail isn't as important. Though it can be mentioned, but then you have to be able to see how all these function at once. But when you get down to Vaikuntha, you can very exactly say, here's this one, here's that one. So it works very nicely. You know, it's very intellectually satisfying, it's exact. But on these others, then you're dealing, like this verse here, he does all these things. When Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is talking about Nityananda Prabhu. In his prayer, he's talking about how he's Balaram, how he's Sesha, how he's Mahavishnu, how all these different things, all in one verse. So it's all these different moods in that are all there in Balaram. And so, as Nityananda, then all these aspects are there. But it's just a matter which... You know, it's just like we're going to get into this, is that Mahavishnu, then he starts a creation by his glance. Right? And that glance then is Sadashiva. Because there's the element of destruction. But at the same time, there's the element of creation, agitation, and that's Arunya Garda. But that whole thing being maintained, that's him as Vishnu. So you have, it's all moods. So his energies take care of it. Does that make sense? So he doesn't transform, his energies transform. So that's the whole point. It's not Brahma Parinamabad, it's Shakti Parinamabad. Like the Shakti transforms. He never transforms. Because if he transforms, it kind of blows the whole description of Brahman being eternal and all that.
Yeah.
Right? So it can't, so it's his energies. That's the difficulty, is then they can't catch that. And then they'll make, since he is manifesting through his potency, all these modes are coming, they will think he's coming from the modes. So then they'll think Brahman is beyond that. But then the point is how does Brahman become covered by the modes? So then this becomes stuff that they absolutely can't define. They try their best, but they don't do a good job. Right? Text 7. Here's an explanatory verse. He is known as the Purusha who manifests many avatars, who glances over matter to manifest the universe from Prakriti, who manifests, it, who maintains its transformations, and who is the Amsa of Krishna. Okay. So he maintains his transformations. He doesn't transform.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, because he is the source of the energies that transform, therefore he is the cause. Right? Because these energies are non-different from him, he is the effect. At the same time, is he's not involved, because it's not to please him that these are going on. It's by his will they go on to take care of the living entity. Does that make sense?
Yes.
This verse clarifies the meaning. Karika is it? This verse clarifies the meaning. Karika is a commentary. Oh, Karika. Okay. Note. Yeah. Okay. Karika. Amar Kosha says Karika Yatan Av Vrit Kyaha. Karika means torture and repetition. Therefore, the teacher sees it as repetition. The student sees it as torture. Yes. Note 23. Srila Rupa Goswami is presenting Laghu Bhagavatamrita in the typical concise style of philosophical shastras. Short definitions and statements of fact are supported by quotations from authoritative scriptures, which are often followed by the author's own karikas or explanatory verses. Right. Yeah, so we see Jiva Goswami gives this also when he's giving his commentaries. Then he'll give a karika. So it's a definition you can always go back to. Like that. 8-9. Just like the previous one from Vishnu Purana, that's a definition. But you may have questions. So the karikas are what makes it very exact and clear. Text 8 and 9. The second canto of Bhagavatam describes the purushas as avatars. The first purusha avatara of Krishna is Mahavishnu. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.42. The types of purusha avatara are described in the Satvata Tantra. The wise know that the purusha consists of three forms of the original Vishnu Shankarshana. The first is the creator of the Mahatattva. The second is situated within the universe. The third is situated within each living entity. Knowing these three, one becomes liberated. The creator of the Mahatattva is the Antaryami, Supersoul, of Prakriti called Sankarsana, Mahavishnu. The second is the Antaryami of Brahma and is called Pradyumna, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. The third is the Antaryami of all Jivas and is called Aniruddha, Kirudakshay Vishnu. So this element is the heart of, because we're taking it as the Paramatma element or the inner, is just Paramatma, but that's for us is the main because that's the feature, whereas the Antaryami for us. But the universe he's Antaryami for as Garbhadakshay Vishnu and the whole material, phenomena is he is Mahavishnu. Right? So you have Prakriti. So the Mahatattva, you have Prakriti, so the Antaryami is Mahavishnu. By his glance, then it is alive. It actually functions. Because Garbhadakshay Vishnu is here, the universe functions. Because Paramatma is in our heart, we're able to function. Does that make sense? Yes.
I've seen it mentioned before, Kshiradakshay Vishnu is Aniruddha.
Yes.
In the other classification, Sankarshana and Pradyumna.
Because Sankarshana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. So those three always go together. Vasudeva is the separate. He's, you know, part of the scene, but he's the, you can say, the... Means you have to have a situation. You have to have an operation of the situation. And, you know, I mean, how that situation can be operated. And you need the elements, or the, let's say, the operation, the proper attitude for operating it, and then you have to have the result that can be gained from operating it. Right? Now the person who is now benefiting by these three, that's Vasudeva. So you're having to function in the situation in a mood and in the element of results or experience. Each of those is appreciated through two qualities. But the pastime itself is appreciated through all six. I say Vasudeva is actually the main. But when you're getting into technical aspects of the expansions of the Lord, then we can put it the Sankarshan is main. The point is the Lord's going to have his pastime in a place. So you have to have the place. Therefore, Sankarshan is there first. So when you see the expansions, you can define them as Sankarshan expands, and then from him comes Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. Because when Prajumna and Aniruddha are there, then everything's ready, then Vasudeva manifesting, the Leela can happen. Right? Or that you can explain it through this Vasudeva, and then from him comes Shankarsha Prajumna Adiruddha. Because there's a mood or a pastime that is desired to be performed. Like we mentioned before, the aspects of vilas is there's some element that Krishna wants to taste. So to taste that, then you need a place, you need the associates, you need the particular mood that is manifest in that place. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, in other words, if he's going to taste the element that he's God, then you need a Vaikuntha planet, and you need all those devotees that see him in majesty. You understand? So therefore, Vasudeva wants to taste that. Therefore, Shankarsha Prajumna and Adiruddha create the environment. You understand? It is just like, okay, you have the... a production. Right? And so, for the persons who are observing this production, right, sit down, you watch a drama, some performance, who's prominent in this production?
The actors.
The actors, yes. But, at the same time, is how did all that happen? You had the director, you had the producers, you had all the technicians. Yeah, does that make sense? So that's Shankarsha Prajumna Adiruddha. They're all the backstage elements. And Vasudeva, he's the actor. Right? You understand? Now, yeah, does that make sense? So, therefore, let's say the credits come up. Whose names come up first?
Under the producer.
You understand? Because that, then it's all there. So for those who appreciate, or you're looking at that technical thing, then you look at that. You understand? If you're looking at the presentation, then it's the actor. You understand? Because this play, this drama is important because this actor is in it. You understand? So you have both these happening simultaneously, depending on which side. If you're looking at the mechanical, then Sankarshan Prajumna Adiruddha are the, you know, Sankarshan becomes prominent. If you're looking at it, the production itself and that what emotions and everything it generates and the feelings and the attraction, that's all then Vasudeva. Right? So coming to establish Dharma and everything, that's Sankarshan. But to interact with the devotees, that's Vasudeva. So they're non-different. So you can take it that Sankarshan is the elder brother because he makes all the arrangements. But Vasudeva is the prominent brother. Right. So that way it works out nicely because as we see in the pastime with Ramachandra, Balaram decided that didn't work out so good. You know, he takes that junior position that things don't quite... He can't, even though his control of the situation is only to please Vasudeva, right? To please Krishna. Still, there's that element as being senior that he can do it in certain ways. Does that make sense? So therefore, Purnimasi is also senior. She's not junior. She's the senior most of all ladies. When Purnimasi walks on the scene, it doesn't matter who's there. She's the senior lady. Doesn't matter if it's in Dwarka, if it's in Vrindavan, she's the senior lady. It's like, because she's the one who technically, she's the producer. Right? She arranges everything. Right? But as far as the pastime is concerned, then Radharani will be prominent, or Mother Jashoda will be prominent in the house, or Rukmini and Satyabhama. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have these two functioning simultaneously. It means, one, if you're going to have a pastime, you have to have a place. And what's the point of the place if there's no pastime? Yeah, so they go together. But the person, the mood of what is desired to be, that's first. Then the arrangements. Just like you want, you're hungry, then there's dinner. You understand?
Would the script writer be considered to be the source of this Chaturvyuhas?
Because the script is talking about the Vasudev aspect, because he's the one that actually is it. In other words, the script is there. Means, in other words, why is somebody making the script? The screenplay is made by someone who has the concept of what would happen. You know, he might come up with himself, but generally you don't hear about that. You hear the director or the person with the, or the producer has the idea, and he either puts it together himself, or he then gets someone to put it together the way he likes it. So in other words, it's still Vasudev, and then in this case, then Shankarshan, you know, the aspect is Yoga Maya, then carries it out. But it's done in such a way as that his Yoga Maya, then even he doesn't know how it's going to unfold. But it's still unfolding according to his desire. So this is why he's unique, because we can't do these things like that. He's in his own category. All contradiction. In other words, you have the feminine, you have one person, the moods are all contradictory. But there's still one person, right? But with the masculine, it's, you know, you have the situations or the existence element are contradictory. You know what I'm saying? Means, in other words, he is the source of everything, but at the same time, he has a source. Does that make sense? So this is, it's different than us. That's why we have to be very, very clear, because otherwise, we have this concept that the supreme controller and enjoyer can happen within the function of Shakti. And therefore, the modern concepts of feminism and all this, that Shakti can be the supreme element. But in position, no. In rasa, yes. But in tattva, no. And it's not understood the difference. So we are learning all these things. What is the difference? So we can make this distinction between the tattva and the rasa, and therefore we can appreciate what's happening in the Lord's pastimes. We can find our place. We can fit in. Is that right? Because the acharyas are only addressing elements that are a problem for us and that we can take advantage of. Because there's unlimited more. Like we hear that Ananta Sesh, with his unlimited mouth, has been speaking since time immemorial about the glories of Krishna, and he won't finish, and eternally he'll do this. So, but that's, you know, way beyond our, you know, how you say, pay grade here. You know? And so, therefore, then it's brought, it's those things that are a problem for us. Or, you know, either the problem or the solution, that's what the acharyas discuss. So that they don't discuss something outside of what's important for us. It's just a matter of, if we're convinced already, then maybe we don't have to get into so much detail. But if there's any doubt comes up, then these are the. Is that, yeah. Yes.
You mentioned something before about six qualities, two.
Yes.
If you think it's important, can you say something more about that?
That's the what did we call it? What was this called?
Color, virya, tejas.
Yes, but there was a name for them. This. Something goodness. When you're dealing with Shakti, these become very important. It means, in other words, the Sankarshan side of things is very important. When you're dealing with the Leela, it's not as important. Because then we get into the personalities involved. But you have Sankarshan, then is Gyan and Bala. Or knowledge and that strength. Right? Then Prajumna will be Aishwarya and Virya. And Aniruddha will be Shakti and Tejas. So these six, then, that function is manifest through those qualities. But as mentioned before, any one of the Chaturvyuha can do everything of everybody else. But the point is why do that? Now, why would you do it? In other words, why would you get up and go to the kitchen and get a snack while you're watching the movie if you could expand yourself and do it? You know what I'm saying? Why did you do that? You just wouldn't. You know, and then the fun part is having done that, it's not that he has to come back and merge into you. They can sit down next to you on the couch and you can then talk about, you know, what's happened. You know, I mean, now
that's, you know, good.
Yeah, I mean, that this guy's cool, right? You know, so this is Krishna, you know. This is what he's doing. You know, so it's just far out. So there's feminine counterparts to all this, right? So therefore, even in this, when you have Sankarshan, you have Jnana and Bala. So the Jnana will be the feminine aspect. The Bala will be the masculine, right? You have your how you say, what's the next one? Tejas and no Aishwarya and Virya. So Aishwarya will be the feminine, Virya will be the masculine. You know, and then you have Shakti and Tejas. Shakti will be the feminine. Because you always are going to have the masculine and feminine. There's no such thing as there's only Shakti without Shaktiman, or only Shakti without Shaktiman. Excuse me, there won't be Shaktiman without Shakti. It means they'll always be together. But at the same time, as those are both qualities within that masculine manifestation. Because the masculine will get things done through the feminine. Does that make sense? So they're all, those are always there. We'll see. It comes up. Okay. Yeah. But this is when you get into the technicalities of the means. We'll get into this means in second canto. When we start talking about Shankar Shampajum Adi Uravasade, this is how they do everything. Just do these. But at this point, then, we're just trying to distinguish the, how you say, you know, the position of the Lord and the differences in the moods and all those things. So that, therefore, why so many divisions? Okay, text 10. The first Purusha is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. When the primeval Lord Narayana created his universal body out of the five elements produced from himself and then entered within that universal body by his own plenary portion, he thus became known as the Purusha. Okay, Narayana is called Adideva, original God, because he has his own inherent powers. When Sankarshan created the abode of the universe out of the five elements generated by himself and entered the universe as Prajumna, that form became known as the Purusha. Okay, so he has his own inherent powers. So that's, you know, just that generic. In other words, Narayana means that generic, you have all these four potential aspects are there. When they're manifest, then it's Sankarshan Prajumna Anuvan Vasudeva. Right? But where they're coming from, their origin is Narayan. In other words, Narayan's that mood of overall. But at the same time, it's because each one of them can manifest all, therefore sometimes each one of them is called Narayan. Like Garbhadaksha Vishnu will be defined as Narayana. Because he sleeps on that water that's produced from himself in the universe. He fills it up half with water and sleeps there. So he's also known as Narayana. Text 11. Brahma Samhita also describes his first Purusha. Having previously been in another form covered by effulgence, Mahavishnu, the Lord of all living entities, appeared in the form of Narayana. This form of Mahavishnu, the soul of the universe, creates countless universes. Because he has countless avatara forms within the universes, he is said to have countless heads, countless eyes, countless feet, and countless arms. And so there, that's the Purusha element. The Supreme Lord is called Narayana because the waters of the Karana ocean arise from his eternal form. In the Garbhodak ocean, it arises from there, therefore he's known as Narayana. The waters are non-different from Sankarshana. This Mahavishnu lies in Yoga Nidra in this ocean. So not, being non-different from Sankarsana, therefore he takes the mood of Sesha, that he lays on this, and then Narayana lays on Sesha. So this ocean is non-different from Sankarsan, so it's Sankarsan who is the position between, right? So how do you say it? Sesha. This Mahavishnu in Yoga Nidra lies in Yoga Nidra in this ocean. Countless avatars reside in him. The seed in the form of the massive jivas lay within the hair holes of Sankarsana, Mahavishnu, since the time of the previous devastation. When he placed the jivas into Prakriti by his glance, Prakriti took the form of golden eggs, the primitive forms of universes, covered with the five great elements before they combine and become functional. Brahma Samhita 5:10-13. Mahavishnu or Sankarsan appeared visibly as a form of Narayana, expanded from Krishna's original form, representing him. This form appeared for glancing over Prakriti, but in the Vishnu Purana it is said, the word apa and nara are synonymous for water. Since the waters are considered the sons of Nara, the primeval male or Vishnu, 24. Nara means the offspring of Nara. Okay. Since these waters take shelter of Mahavishnu from the ancient past, he is called Narayana, Vishnu Purana 1:4-6. So, what connection has the verse with this definition of Narayana? Thus, Brahma Samhita gives a similar explanation. The Supreme Lord is called Narayana because the waters of the Karana ocean arise from his eternal form. Because the water arose from Sankarsana, it is considered non-different from Sankarsana, because the situation is always generated by Sankarsana. He lies sleeping, Yoga Nidra, in that ocean, Tasmin, on his bed of Sesha. The word Narayana is used suitably to denote Sankarsana, lying on the causal ocean, which takes shelter of him. He has countless amshas, such as Prajumna. His activity is described. Lying on his bed of Sesha, he glanced over Prakriti. By that glance, he placed the group of small jivas, who are the seed of the universe, Bijam, and who were lying in his hair pores during Pralaya, into the womb of Prakriti. These words are supplied to the verse to complete the meaning. Then the golden globes appeared, the rest is clear. Yes?
Pretty clear.
Pretty clear?
Not quite.
Not quite. So in other words, everything's coming from the Lord. So he's expanding the place of the pastimes of Sankarsan. Right? Then he's glancing on the material energy. That then creates the universes. But that glance is the jivas. Right? And so that agitates the material nature. Then you get the garbha, means the womb. Right? So then there's the manifestation of that. Yes. So then you have all these little golden globes, you know, floating around.
Golden eggs?
Yes, golden eggs.
Yes. Right, so he's glancing at the material energy which actually comes from himself.
Yes.
Okay.
Because in other words, it's a Rama Devi is his consort. But here, then you're taking the mood, because he's Sankarsan, then that means you're dealing with that aspect of Yoga Maya, so Yoga Maya, Mahamaya. So he's glancing at, technically, his own consort, but not in the form that she consorts with him, so he never consorts with the material energy.
So then...
So he's glancing at Rama Devi. Right? But then that aspect of Mahamaya is then what this glance into. So therefore, the glance then is Sadashiva. Because Sadash Shiva then deals with Prakriti. So you have the pure form that reflects and stays within the Brahman. And then you have the part that actually interacts in that Shambhu. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So thing, you have all these subtle things that are happening at once. So it's why... That's why the corporate little boxes don't work so good in this. You know, because you have that form of it moving, but at the same time you have all these other aspects, because its moods are transforming. That's the whole thing that you're dealing with here. It's all just moods. Right? The external, because we're looking at the mechanical external. For that, then that's what's different, that it's a mood. You know what I'm saying? What makes a rock a rock?
The mood.
Huh?
The mood.
Mood. And what's the mood?
Dead.
Yeah, it just sits there. Right? You're comfortable. If the rock just hits here, you're comfortable. What happens if it's liquid and it's moving around?
Then I'm uncomfortable.
Then very uncomfortable.
Quite.
Yeah. So in other words, it's the mood that's important. Yes. Yes.
Is Sadashiva and Shambhu, is it the same thing? Is it the same form of Krishna?
Means you have to first figure out what your question is.
Yeah, Shambhu is the same.
No. It's not. This means, in other words, the workshop is to discuss your already formulated question. It's not a medium for formulating your question.
Yes.
You understand? That's a different... It means if the chairs would be sitting in a circle if that was the purpose. But they're not. Does that make sense? So if you know exactly what you want to say, say it.
Yes, I was just confused with the vision. I can't, because I cannot remember the vision itself. It's called Sadashiva.
Sadashiva means he is the glance.
He's the glance. And is that Shambhu?
Shambhu is what enters. Sadashiva is what doesn't enter. So what goes with the living entities and therefore, you can say, impregnates the Prakriti. So you get Mahatattva and then the whole process of creation starting. That's Shambhu. Because Sadashiva doesn't deal with Mahamaya. He only deals with Yogamaya. So it's a different mood. But Sadashiva and Mahavishnu are the same person. But at the same time, there's different moods, so then there is a different manifestation. So Mahavishnu can interact with Sadashiva, though technically they're the same person. Like that. So... If that doesn't make sense, don't worry about it at this point. Okay. Okay. Text 12 and 13. Lingam refers to a form different from the original. Footnote 25. Jiva Goswami explains in his commentary on Brahma Samhita that Mahavishnu becomes covered with effulgence at the time of placing the jivas in Prakriti, and thus his form becomes indistinct at that time. This is called linga. Because you're dealing with this a generic mood. The living entity wants to be the controller and enjoyer. So it's not specific. Right? You have the Purusha Bhav. Right? And so therefore then it's linga is just an aspect of. So he's covered with effulgence, because it's just the generic Brahman, which is going to... Everything will be created from this Brahman. Okay. The second form of the Purusha is also described in Brahma Samhita. Eternal Mahavishnu, the soul of the universes with countless heads, enters into each of these universal eggs by means of expanded forms. So why he's expanded is because it's Mahavishnu has all these different moods that he can have all these different unlimited forms of avatars. So then to further that, to manifest that, then he enters into to the universe's Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Right. Does that make sense? So So each one is just a furtherance of the of it, right? Sankarshan is the situation, then there's the mood, then there's the actual experience. So then you get Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha. Right? Thus, after placing the jivas in Prakriti by his glance, he enters into each of the universes. Appearing in each one is Prajumna. He enters into each of the universes by these amsha forms. 26. Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the second part, 333-46, also describes Mahavishnu's expansion as Lord Mahakala, who resides in the universe's outer shell of Pradhana. Right? So, because that's where means your time is there, because that enters with the jivas. The jivas come, time and false ego. So then those elements sit on the outer shell. Because that's how you get in, that's how you get out. You give those up, you get out. You don't give them up, you'll never get out. Because he's there in that form to keep you from getting out. Fair enough. Text 14. In the story of Narayana in the Moksha Dharma, it is said that the Vishnu lying in the Garbhodaka with the lotus growing from his navel is called Aniruddha. But he is actually the form known as Prajumna and is the producer and Antayami of Brahma. Because Brahma is who's going to create the universe. So in other words, the manifestation we see here is Brahma. Because the primary creation is Vishnu. That's the Antayami aspect. So the universal form is the Antayami of Brahma. Because from there, everything is able to manifest. In the Narayana section of the Mahabharata, the second Purusha is described. So in other words, you can explain how he is Aniruddha, but we're pointing out, but the Acharya is pointing out here, that we understand this is Prajumna in actuality. Because as we said, each one can do what the other does. So it's not really a contradiction to say that. But for clarity of the expansions of moods, then he's Prajumna. Because now he's going to create that attraction. Right? What's the point of Brahma's creation if no one's attracted to it? Right? If you produce something, a commodity, and no one likes it, then it's useless. But if everybody likes it, then it's considered, you know. So popular means somebody likes it. So that popular element, that's Prajumna, not Aniruddha.
Yes.
Right? Mm. So that's why, therefore, Garbhodakshay Vishnu is Prajumna.
Could we say that Aniruddha in some way contains Prajumna?
This is an expansion from, yeah, because so then you're going to be attracted to, but now what are you going to do with it? Okay. So there's a goal. That's Aniruddha. That's Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Because now there's the mood of attraction to lording it over the universe, but then there's going to be specifics of how you're going to try to lord it over the material energy. That's Aniruddha.
But if you have that, then you would infer that there would be some attraction to it since you're going to...
But the thing is, this Aniruddha goes back to Prajumna. So you remember, okay, is that once you get a goal,
yeah,
that becomes now part of the field.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, the man has no house, right? Okay?
Yeah.
So he has a desire for a house.
Yes.
But in his identity, he's not technically a householder.
Yes.
Right? Now he makes his endeavor, he gets the house.
Yes.
So his goal has been accomplished.
Yes.
But now, where does that go? It doesn't stay as a goal. Now it becomes part of that whole sphere. There's a relationship. Right? So now he has the mood of, I'm a householder. Right? So now as a householder, now what can you do with your house? Then he'll set a goal for that. Okay, let's have a program. Right?
Yes.
And so therefore then a goal is set. But then once you've had the program, now you're the guy that did that program.
Yes. Bigger program.
Yeah, so bigger program, or the one that does the program, or, oh yeah, he's like, I did that program. You know,
no more progress.
Yeah, yeah. Does that make sense? So, in other words, Aniruddha always comes back to Prajumna.
Of course.
But having come back, a new goal is generated. You know what I'm saying? In other words, once you get the blue purse, now it becomes, instead of a goal, it becomes part of the field. Now you want the gray one.
Yes.
You understand? Then it just keeps going.
Now we have this one.
Yes. Yes, no?
Yes.
Yes. That's why in men's stuff there's two or three colors, and women's stuff is about, you know. Yes. Because of this principle of prajumna.
Because
the feminine being in the position where as prayojana, then there's always need of a goal. The masculine being in identity, so you know what I'm saying? So, in other words, the man identifies with the black bag,
yes.
You know,
yes.
But the woman doesn't.
No.
Yes. You understand?
Yes.
So that's the difference. Therefore, you need another one.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's the whole. In the Narayana section of the Mahabharata, the second Purusha is described. The fourth form created the indestructible Sesha and is called Sankarsana. He gave birth to Prajumna. From Prajumna appeared myself, Aniruddha. I carry out creation repeatedly. Brahma arose from the navel of Aniruddha. The Mahabharata Shanti Parva 339-70-72. Aniruddha, who, equipped with power of manifestation, created Brahma, is called the great soul of the worlds. Mahabharata Shanti Parva 340-27-28. Bhagavatam also describes, right, so there's, in other words, there's this connection between them. Right?
Yeah.
The part of the Purusha lies down within the water of the universe. From the navel lake of his body sprouts a lotus stem, and from the lotus stem, atop this stem, Brahma, the master of all engineers in the universe, becomes manifest. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha, but he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual excellence, spiritual existence par excellence. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.2-3. And so the situated means that's where their potency comes from. But at the same time, he's non-different. So the Shakti carries it out. Right. The various planets such as should be thought of as they were parts of the body of Vishnu, such as the feet. This is a meditation for strengthening the minds of persons with gross intellect. Right? And worth thinking. This is so technical, and this is for those with gross intellect.
What to do?
Yes. Oh, maybe that's the point, is one has to go from no intellect to gross intellect.
Yeah.
From gross, you can go to subtle, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think there's a quote by, there's a statement or something by Prabhupada that he is giving us brains. In other words, we didn't have them. He gives them as brains, right?
He was accused of brainwashing. So now this is brain giving movement.
Yeah, brain giving. You have to have a brain to wash, right? There's no brain. But here there is a doubt whether Brahma arose from Prajumna or Aniruddha. Right? So these are the things that are being brought out. So for us, you know, this very nice, clear definition. We're very comfortable with it. But in the various literature, Vedic literatures, when these things come out, depending upon the situation, then they're describing these various aspects. So one can have a doubt. So the acharyas have dealt with this. This is what's special. So all we have to do is just sit down and eat the mango. There's no seed, no fruit. We didn't have to get it off the tree. We didn't even have to cut it up. It's just, you know. And then we're complaining, you know, oh, so hard, you have to put it in your mouth. So austere. Okay. The text says that he who is lying on the Garbha dock, actually Prajumna, is Aniruddha, because they are non-different. In the Mahabharata, Aniruddha is said to be the source of Brahma. Actually, however, Prajumna is the source of Brahma. This is clear from the Bhagavatam verse quoted, since it is clearly shown that Garbhodakshaya produces Brahma. The master, in the form of Prajumna, is the producer and antayami of Brahma. Text 15. The third Purusha is described in the verse. In other words, you have to take these aspects of anything to do with Aniruddha in connection with Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, or the other way around, in connection with the situation as supportive of. They're not contradictory. So there's no such thing as contradiction in the Shastra. It's just which is the prominent one, and the other one is defined in connection with the prominent one. Does that make sense? Because Krishna being everything, that means he is the primary, he is the secondary. So it's just a matter of which situation is described, which aspect is the primary, which aspect is the secondary. Right? So, yeah. The third Purusha is described in the verse from the second canto of Bhagavatam, starting Kechit Sve Hantara. This verse describes the third Purusha avatara. The proof is the following verse. Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club, respectively. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.8. The Lord of the Milk Ocean, Aniruddha, the third Purusha, with a form measuring 1 pradesh, that's this size. Residing in the heart of all living entities is the object of meditation. 1 pradesh is the link from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the index finger. Oh, so they're using this one. Thumb to the, so that's why they're getting 8. This is 9. So they're using this one. Okay. Guna avatars. Text 16. The guna avatars arising from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu are now described. Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva are involved in maintenance, creation, and destruction. Purushat means from Prajumna, Garbhodakshaya, who is a Swamsa arising from Mahavishnu. Text 17. In the first canto, it is said, the transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature. Now here it says Swamsa. Right? So that generally the Swamsa, because Vilas means that it's less, not manifesting as much, but it's not so much that there's such a great difference in the manifestation of potency. Swamsa generally means there's quite a difference in the manifestation of potency. So in other words, to manifest all the universes is one level of power. To function within one universe then doesn't take so much, so then it's Svamsa. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's much less in potency. Right? It doesn't mean he has less potency, it's how much he manifests is what how you define.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, let's say, the cook is cooking the puris. You know, so then who's the puri cook? You know, so he's cooking the puris. But it's not that he couldn't cook everything else, all the other preparations, just he's cooking the puris. So how much potency do you have to manifest to cook the puris? You know, a certain amount, that's it. Right? Not as much as making the whole menu or organizing the whole kitchen and all the bogan. It's just, you just sit there and, you know, just like that, you know. So that's Swamsa. Swamsa means for the purpose being done, right? Because Vilas means there's always a purpose. The purpose is less. That means the amount of potency required to make it manifest is less. Therefore, Swamsa.
Yes.
Okay? Text 17. In the first canto, it is said, the transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance, and just for the world's material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction. Okay, he's indirectly associated with them for its creation, maintenance, and destruction. So we see is that these modes are also then connected with the creation's passion, maintenance, goodness, and ignorance's destruction. He accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23. Parapurusha here refers to Garbhadakshayi, who is one alone within the universe, for maintenance, creation, and destruction of the universe. He associates with the three gunas as the controller of each guna by accepting the forms of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The benefits of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha for humanity arise from the Vishnu, Sattva, Tano, among the three. Because he's what controls things, right? Text 18. An explanatory verse. Okay, so a karika. The relationship of the Purusha with the gunas is that of being their controller. Among the three, he who is the Swamsa of Swayam Rupa Krishna is not bound by the gunas. So in other words, the Vishnu Tattva, the Vishnu Murti is not bound by the gunas. Shiva and Brahma are.
But Shiva is not under the modes, is it?
Well, see, where it means it depends on where we're talking, because yeah. Now we've moved inside, right? So in other words... Yes. Mahavishnu is not controlled, you know, at that level. But when you come into the universe, the second stage, then that aspect is associated with, like that. And though at the same time, in control of. So that's why you see sometimes is, you know, in one mood or the other. So when he's not controlled by, that's Sadashiva. When he's controlled by, that's Shambhu. How can there be a relation between the material gunas and the Supreme Lord? For it is said, Maya parait yabhimuke cha vilaj jamana. Maya cannot stand in front of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.47. This verse answers, the gunas are controlled and the Purusha among the three forms is the controller of the gunas. That is called yoga. You know, so it's like the demigods, they take care of these particular elements, but the potency is coming from somewhere else. So the potency of Brahma and Shiva is coming from Krishna. Okay, that is called yoga. He is not bound by the gunas. Among the three forms, he who is Svamsa is the Svamsa of Krishna. Vishnu is not in contact with the gunas. Drumila explains. In the beginning, the original Supreme Personality manifested the form of Brahma through the material mode of passion in order to create this universe. The Lord manifested his form as Vishnu, the Lord of sacrifice and protector of the twice-born Brahmanas and their religious duties to maintain the universe. And when the universe is to be annihilated, the same Supreme Lord employs the material mode of ignorance and manifests the form of Rudra. The created living beings are thus always subject to the forces of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.5. The Lord by his will becomes Brahma and Shiva by association with Rajas and Tamas. He becomes Buddha by association with Pashanda Dharma. He becomes Rishabha by association with extreme renunciation. However, because he is the Supreme Lord, he does not become contaminated by this association. By worship of such forms, Dharma cannot be perfected, and liberation cannot be achieved. In Harivamsa, Shiva himself says, Vishnu is without a doubt the giver of liberation to all beings. End quote. Vishnu is not even in contact with Sattva Guna, but rather he simply controls it by his will. Thus it has been said that all benefits arise from him. Vamana Purana said. So he's the controller of Sattva Guna, but he's not actually the incarnation of, because he's Shuddha Sattva. Right? The three forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are actually forms of Vishnu, the great soul of all beings. He is situated as the form of Brahma in Brahma, and the form of Shiva in Shiva. Janardana takes a separate form as Vishnu. Right? So he's the Brahma of Brahma, the Shiva of Shiva, but he himself just takes the part of Vishnu. Firewood is a Though the control of the gunas is only one person, for action in relation to the gunas, he takes these forms with various degrees of covering. Firewood is a transformation of earth, but smoke is better than the raw wood. And fire is still better, for by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifices. Similarly, passion is better than ignorance. But goodness is best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.24. Wood, smoke, and fire have natures of inactivity, slight action, and manifest action. With no expectation of performing sacrifice in wood, slight expectation in smoke, and full expectation in fire. So tamas, rajas, and sattva have natures of ignorance, action, and knowledge. Tamas yields no spiritual insight. Rajas yields slight spiritual insight. And sattva yields spiritual insight directly. Right? So that's why being a sattva, the Puran, it's trying to bring that out. This idea of, like we see in Gita, where that one is situated in the mode of passion. So you take your, that, what is your... I see. One's perspective of the world in passion, and connects that to the Lord, and that's where you begin. Because from smoke, then you continue, then you can bring it to fire. Right? Means when you're starting, you have smoke. You keep fanning it, and all that, you'll get fire. But the idea that smoke is good enough, right? It's a slight insight to say that that's good enough. That's the mode of passion.
That's why we say fan the spark.
Yeah. But do we catch the inference here? In other words, this idea that, well, I'm connecting everything to Krishna, that's good enough. If it's generated from no other passion, that's what's inspiration for doing that. It's a start, it's the smoke, but the real sacrifice is when it gets to the goodness, that you're doing it because that's what you're supposed to do, not because that's what you want to be doing. You know, from the material platform. Right, and the spiritual platform is—it becomes dynamic when you want to be engaged in the spiritual activity rather than you're supposed to do it. Right, but you still have to get from one to the other. Yes.
Now, in the Bhagavatam verse mentioned there, there's four elements: earth, wood, fire, and smoke.
So you get your pradhan, because pradhan is what everything else is coming from in a way. So. That Mahavishnu's glance agitates it, so therefore the modes of nature come out, and then the modes of nature then break down everything else. So then you get your 24 elements. But the modes of nature is how the material energy functions. Just like the internal potency is samvit sandini sladini. Right? That's the eternal form. That energy works. This one works through the modes. Okay. Because tamas and rajas do not encourage spiritual vision to the Lord, but sattva does, it is considered the best. So that's why when it comes to fire, then you can perform sacrifice. Because sacrifice means there must be the element of giving up, voluntarily giving up the result for someone else's benefit. So when it's what's recommended by Shastra for elevation of the soul to transcendental understanding, that's real sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Now the person, okay, he gives his life for his country or community or some higher person, then yes, it is an element of sacrifice, but it's in the mode of passion and anger, because it doesn't actually give spiritual realization. Though there is something, so it's better. So smoke is better than wood. Right? So we have to acknowledge that, yes, they're nice people, they're trying to do something, they're trying to help, they're doing so many welfare programs. It is better. But it still hasn't come to the point of actual sacrifice. Yes.
Are we here talking about borrowed qualities?
Yes, you would say borrowed. But here, even you had the Brahman functioning in from the mode of goodness. If that functioning is not devotional, it's still borrowed, but you're borrowing the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So we should try to become iron in fire, not iron in smoke.
Yes. Iron in smoke is still pretty irony. That's the thing. So that's the whole point, is that it's a start, but it's not the finish. Because in Anartas, that's utsamayi. You started, like the little kid goes to school, he learned ABC, he comes home, he's a scholar, right? You know, and his mother has to lavish, all kinds of nice,
discourses.
It's like that, he gets something special to eat, like this, and he thinks that that's it, it's done, he can do that forever. No, he tomorrow he has to come back with, a DEF, He's saying, no, but ABC is, good, what's the whole point? Then the mother will say, no, you're being proud. So that's the whole point, is it is a start as long as that enthusiasm is there. But if you leave it at that, this is good enough. So that's the balance that we're always working at, is that we are trying to engage. So in that way, then, this karma, Mr. Bhakti, is devotional service in that it started, it's created that yoga. But if we hold on to the attachment to the modes, then it actually breaks down, because yoga means that it's the Lord is connected with these modes, but not. He's not controlled by them. So the point is if we're saying it's yukta vairagya, it's connected, it means it has to be connected without being controlled by the modes. So we're still controlled by the modes, it's still in this lower place. So we can't leave it there. It has to come to the point of full sacrifice, so the mode of goodness. So that's why we're seeing, is that Prabhupada was saying, is that the Vedic culture is about the mode of goodness. It's a culture in the mode of goodness. Now, it can accommodate all the elements of passion and ignorance that people have, because even you're talking about goodness, it basically means at least 75% is goodness, but 25% is going to be passion and ignorance. So the Vedic culture accommodates that 25%, but it's about the 75%. Now, if we think she can accommodate, so then that's fine. It's fine in the context of 75% goodness. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in other words, we can see, it just struck me, it's why 75%, when I've heard before, Rupa Goswami mentioned 60, because 60 is not safe. 75 is far enough in that it's safe. Because 60 is just over the line.
And 75, who says that?
Prabhupada mentions on one purport. He's talking about nishtha being 75%. Right? In other words, a nishtha that's practical, that you'll stay nishtha, is 75%.
Okay.
You can say it begins at 60, but it could fall back.
You
can still have that element of stable. At 75, then you can say this is stable, because you want to get to nishtha.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Kanishta nishta.
Yeah, it means you want to be a madhyama nishta at least. So kanishta, then it's a little shaky. So. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Jaya Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jaya
Jainataya Gaurabhinoda ki.
Yeah,
it's heavy stuff. It's heavy stuff.
This?
It's good, but it takes a little.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing between the two. It's just like I think it's a system. Someone's telling me that I think they use it everywhere, but I heard about it from somebody explaining it in Australia. You get the wood that you're going to make fence posts out of, and you stick it into a barrel with tar oil. Then you light a fire under the tar oil, and it gets hot, right? And then you don't just leave it at that because you think, yeah, it gets hot, most will go in. They say no. Then you let the fire go out once it's actually gotten hot. Then let it cool completely down. And then you build a fire again. You do this a few times. And that somehow or another, that hot cold then gets the maximum in, right?
So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So then for the morning classes, the sweet thing, sweet, and this and is the, you know, yeah, you know. So between the two, then, you know. Think this is too much in the morning. Oh, this is very nice.
This is also.
Yeah, that's the advantage. You know, so the mornings, you always remember Krishna. This is the never forget.
Yes. Funny enough, you see a little more devotees in the morning than.
Yeah, strangely enough.
I wonder why.
I wonder if you switch the two, if it would happen. If you'd actually get more coming in the evening.
Suddenly Bhagavatam class at the temple sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. Okay.